I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
D&D Versus is a spooky, scary, vile, and violent podcast intended for mature listeners. Content warnings can be found in the episode description. Welcome to D&D Versus, an actual play D&D adventure where one DM is running the table and one player is dancing to a beat that never drops. I am Yanato Blue. Here with me again is...
Hey, it's me again, Stefan Yunes, bringing Smashing Pam to the party.
Thank you for coming back. Before we dive in, if you have another Smashing Pam factoid for us, please.
So the dress that Pam got in the last episode, it's not the first dress she's ever had, but it's the only dress she's ever been, like, required to have. Other people have given them to her, but they understand, like, Pam's going to do what she wants. She's probably going to cut it up and make it into some cool tunic or something. So she is just, like, deeply resentful of having to wear a dress right now.
That's all she's resentful about?
She's got some other stuff going on, but right now she's just like, if not for this stupid dress. So it's the dress's fault, whatever happens.
So to recap last time, Pam partied with a bunch of rich kids in the woods, not realizing that they were rich kids. And when curfew was called, proceeded to find her dear Captain Ludlow, who had wandered off from the party amongst other people who had also wandered off from the party that Pam did not find where they wandered off to. Captain Ludlow and Pam proceeded back to the city because she had gotten an invite for brunch from one of her new rich gal pal friends, Nicole Ritchie, but did have to go and buy a dress because Nicole's valet had informed her that, hey, if you show up to this brunch dressed as you are, you're going to be something of an object of ridicule or consternation or outright ire by Nicole's father. So Pam went on a little bit of a shopping trip. Got herself a new dress. Captain Ludlow also refitted himself from his Order in Furnace attire and treated dear dog boy Groucho to a brand new sweater. I've been thinking about what the sweater looks like since last session, and I'm going to say canonically, it's a nice bright red, little yellow stripes right around the wrist, and then a big yellow star on his back. So it's kind of like the Diddy Kong sweater.
He's the cutest thing that's ever happened, tied with Mr. Beepo.
As you all were returning to the brunch destination, there was a strange smell in the air from a hatch that Pam had discovered earlier in the morning and left others to investigate. Not long after, flames shot up from the hatch. Large quakes started to shake the ground as explosions shot up from other points in the city in very similar fashion. And we said goodbye or farewell to Captain Ludlow as the entire main hub of the city cracked away and dropped into a pit below and disappeared into darkness. And that's where we ended last session. So we're going to start this session with the unfortunate lamentations and wailing of our dear boy Groucho as he dives towards the edge and watches Captain Ludlow disappear into darkness below and just screams out, "Ludlow!" And is like about to rend his sweater in tragic grief. What is Pam doing?
Pam is running up to her precious Groucho and sweeping him up in her arms and giving him a really tight hug. And I'm going to tell him, Groucho, listen, I know that was scary and I'm scared too. But the first rule of partying is you roll out with who you roll in with. Okay? So he might be down in some pit, but it doesn't mean he's gone, and it doesn't mean we're not going to try to find him. That's what we do.
He is whimpering. He's speaking unintelligibly. He's stammering, and he can't quite form a full sentence. But give me a persuasion roll to see if you calm him down with that assurance.
My sweet baby boy. It's a 13.
Okay, so with a 13, the saddest puppy dog eyes, a sniffle that he kind of like in very childish manner, like wipes with like the entire back of his forearm. Then he nods and looks down into the darkness. Give me a perception roll.
Oh, it's a 7. Oh, God.
You hear the sound of bugles behind you. You see the doors to the manor are thrown open. You can see guardsmen holding up the bugles to herald the arrival of Nicole, who is rushing out at you, looking distraught, looking panicked, but also looking relieved to see you. She rushes up and pulls you into a hug. Can I get another perception roll from you?
Be clear that I'm giving her like the most basic, not engaging hug because I'm still like really not psyched that I thought this was like a druid festival and it was just a bunch of rich kids playing druid. And I got a 9 on my perception check.
Her hug definitely feels way tighter and sort of way warmer than you would expect it. But I mean, given the circumstances that an entire city just disappeared, it's kind of hard to be surprised by that, I suppose. Looking over her shoulder, since you're giving her a rather passive hug, you do see another older gnome, this one a male, coming through the door, and he's walking towards you. But he's striding very briskly. He looks very serious. He's got a long, dark beard, and the heralds blow the bugle again as he comes through.
Hello.
And he rushes up to you. And, Nicole, who is this? Is this your friend? Is this the friend you told me you were having for brunch? Her arrival is, it's too, well, and he just looks confused. Like, he looks completely frazzled. He doesn't know what to, he's trying to piece together what just happened, what he just saw, and looking at this gaping pit where an entire city used to be.
And I'm just going to interrupt their little interlude and like, I'm going to literally step between them and be like, hi, I'm Pam. Your daughter invited me for brunch, but it turned into like this big thing where I had to get like a dress and stuff. And then your yard exploded and my friend disappeared. So nice to meet you. Do you have like a basement where I could go down and see if I could like get into this undergroundy place?
Somehow you hear a voice coming from over your shoulder because you don't remember seeing anybody there. But you hear somebody say, I don't think we'll be allowing you into the basement. I think that we need to place a certain degree of lockdown until we can determine what exactly has happened, who may be responsible, including yourself, and what the best course of action is for securing what remains of this city for the interests of the kingdom and for the Order Infernus. And you turn and you see that somehow over your right shoulder, standing about 3 feet behind you, is another half orc, but this one is dressed in very fine clothing. He's wearing sort of a long cloak. He has a fine, like, merchant suit on of, like, you know, dark three-piece suit with a pocket watch chain. Just looks very, very classy and well-bred.
Pam clocks this as, like, pretentious ass bullshit. And she's like already like, okay, this dude that I'm trying to talk to doesn't get that we have a bigger problem on our hands. This dude's obviously not my vibe. So the first thing I want to do is pull my baby Groucho aside, lean down and talk to him and be like, listen, I don't like what's going on here. There's just like, there's too many complications. I'm getting a little confused and I love you and I want you to be safe. So what I'm going to do is I've got these two hand axes in my bag, and I want you to have those, and I trust that you will know when it's important to use them. Can I trust you?
He puffs up his chest and he gives a stiff nod.
You are strong and you are brave. And like I said, you roll out with who you roll in with, and I don't care who these guys are, we're gonna find our buddy. Pop back up, look at those two guys, and just be like, okay, that's cool. This brunch is obviously not happening. I promised my friend who fell in the pit mimosas, and I don't go back on a mimosa promise. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to go around the perimeter of the pit and try to see if there's a way for me to start climbing down.
So while you were talking to Groucho, the half-orc I mentioned has been talking to Sir Lionel. And by the time you stand up and say that, Sir Lionel is nodding at whatever the gentleman was telling him. And he says, quite right, quite right. No, I'm sorry. We will have to detain you for the time being. As my associate here from the Order Infernus is giving sound advice, with such an occurrence, even if only for your own safety, we cannot permit you to leave at this time and we will need to question you.
Guys, like the guy who fell in is one of the members of your order. Shouldn't that be like a priority? He's in your party.
At this, the half-orc who was addressed as the colonel looks fascinated and says, I'm certain that there are several members of our order down here, since we were already providing security services for the town as a sort of trial run. And what I've discussed with Sir Lionel here is that we should be tasked to lead the investigation to prove our worth and the contract that we are negotiating for increased security services to the city.
All of this sounds like a whole bunch of excuses to not help people. So I don't really see why I should agree to be detained, because obviously I'm amazing and I am perfectly safe on my own. I got my buddy. I got my giant capybara. We're going to be fine. I'll see y'all later.
Just as you say that, somebody walks in from the exterior, a little gnome with very disheveled black hair. He's wearing a long tan cloak that is dragging on the ground behind him. He has kind of a lazy eye. Looks like he just kind of wandered in. Like, he doesn't look lost, but he also has this kind of aimless sort of saunter to him. And he says, you know, there is something to that. Both the Colonel and Sir Lionel roll their eyes seeing this gnome. And Sir Lionel says, nobody asked you to be here, Columbo. The gnome wags his finger and says, well, you know, technically she didn't ask to be here either, but I hear a lot of knocking about that you're trying to keep this lady here against her will. And I agree, it is a little suspicious that you happen to be here right on the edge of a catastrophe at the time that might be suspicious. But if all coincidences were suspicious, I suppose there would be a lot more suspicion to go around, wouldn't there, Colonel?
Pam clocks this guy and just immediately loves him, immediately is enchanted and looks at him and says, and you, being the smart guy that you are who checks into things, would know that when the explosion was being like puffed up and everybody's doing the explodey things, I was buying a dress because I almost punched the guy in the store and Ludlow stopped me.
Ludlow, he said he's a Order Infernus escort that you had that's stationed here in the city that went down with the city. So Ludlow was assigned to this city. Isn't that right, Colonel? The Colonel kind of raises an eyebrow and says, actually, we don't have a Ludlow stationed for the Order Infernus in this city. We have a Ludlow that was stationed on the island, and he looks very imperiously at Groucho.
I see him clock Groucho, and I'm just going to walk straight up to him, and I'm like, yeah, that's my buddy. You got a problem?
I don't have a problem, so long as he has proper papers permitting him to have left the island.
Oh, are you like the island police or something? Ugh, I am so tired of you people. Why can't I just leave?
Well, you're here with a refugee who's not permitted to be from the island, an island where there was a fairly important person murdered just this past evening. Can you explain how it was when you left the island and under what circumstances?
We left like 2-3 days ago on my buddy, Mr. Beepo here. He swam us out. And then we camped, and then we went to a party, and then we went shopping, and now we're here.
Give me a deception roll for that.
18, because I literally did not realize I was being deceitful. That's all Pam remembers.
Yeah, you did lie about one very key thing. Nicole kind of looks at you because I just rolled insight for everybody, and everybody else rolled low on insight, but Nicole is the one person who beat your deception. And she says, wait, were you in the woods for multiple days before you came to our party?
I think we were just there for like one day. Like we camped and we rested and then we heard the party. And so we joined it.
Columbo kind of bows his head and wags a finger and says, timelines can get a little bit iffy. But, you know, we have it on good authority that one of the last people to see the Lady Blanchette alive was your traveling companion, Captain Ludlow. And at this, Groucho stiffens. And just looks terrified.
He stays on my back. And so I'm just going to swing him around and hug him. Be like, I'm not sure what you mean by that. But Ludlow has been nothing but wonderful to me and very protective of us. And I'm sure if something bad happened, he has reasons, which is more a reason to go find him so we can figure this out.
And at this, the Colonel steps forward and says, unfortunately, I'm picking up what Columbo is putting down, and I think it would be best if you remained here for questioning due to your potential involvement as a key witness in the murder of the Lady Blanchette. And he turns around and he shoots one of those two-finger whistles at the guards who begin trotting in your direction.
Okay, is this pit the kind where I could just dive in?
I mean, you can certainly jump into any kind of a pit.
Tell me more about this pit before I make any more decisions. Like, are there ridges on the side? Like, if I hopped on Mr. Beepo with my guy, could he, like, are capybaras good climbers?
I don't believe they're known for being good climbers. No, they typically live in jungles and forest areas. So if you had like an enormous goat, I would say that you'd probably have a better chance, but not a capybara. Yeah, I think they're more burrowers and swimmers.
Hmm. Okay, so much for that idea.
Columbo is going to come up and say, one more thing, if I can ask another question.
If you think this is a good idea, then I will work with you. But those two guys, I don't like them. I don't think they have good party spirit to them. And I don't think that they understand the importance of rolling in and rolling out with your people.
He says, well, you see, my wife, she happens to love brunch.
Well, she always tends to make plans for brunch and accomplish more than one thing. You know, brunch isn't enough of a reason even for a real brunch head like her to leave the house. So I was wondering if you were maybe trying to accomplish anything else while you were here in the city.
Me?
Something else that might explain your reason for being here to perhaps diminish the doubt that is currently brewing around you.
Oh, I mean, I don't really have a plan. She just said I could come have brunch with her, and my buddy Ludlow had never had mimosas before, and I wanted him to try them. All I know is that brunch is a great meal that has some breakfast stuff and has some lunch stuff, and you can drink during it, and it's a great way to spend a morning after a party, especially when you've just made new friends.
Nicole clears her throat and says, actually, she was very fascinated by the fact that the marvelous Professor Frankenfurter has certain treasures and items of interest stored here in the bank and vaults of our city.
I'm going to hiss at her. It's like, you are not up on girl code. I don't like you now.
You can make an insight roll if you want to.
Oh, okay. I got a 10 on that one.
Right. She's just trying to be a straight shooter. Like, she gives you this look and, you know, it's clear that she's not trying to sink anybody. She's just trying to make sure everything is out there. And as far as things go, like, you know, you recall just now that Columbo said, hey, he's looking for reasons why you're here to diminish the suspicion and whatever other theories people might be coming up with against you.
Oh, right. Right. So, okay. Pam, after being mad and now finally understanding this, she's like, oh, yeah. That's what we were doing. I keep forgetting that we are doing stuff because I just, you know, I just do whatever. But there's some guy like Professor Hot Dog and his dad, Dr. Frankenstein, and they're bad guys. And we were looking for them. But I got distracted by the party and now we're here. And Ludlow knows where those guys are, or at least where to find those guys, I guess. So I got to find him if we're going to find the guys.
Columbo says, do you happen to know any of the items that are in the Professor Frankenfurter's vault?
Pam is just like, nope, not a clue. That kind of stuff doesn't really interest me. My friend needed help, so I'm going to help my friend.
And he says, well, I happen to be coming from the hall, and given the catastrophe that just took place, I figured it would be a good opportunity to stop by. And he pulls something out of his coat wrapped in a handkerchief. Yes, I've seen Columbo.
Is it a hard-boiled egg?
No, it is not a hard-boiled egg. It's actually quite long. Like, he has one of those Mary Poppins effects where it's like, it's about 3 feet long and it's wrapped. It seems to be very skinny except for the head of it and the handle of it. And he slowly unwraps it. It takes 20 folds the way Columbo always takes forever to unwrap whatever he happens to be carrying in his handkerchief. And he reveals a grabby claw. If you've ever been to like the zoo and seen those like animal grabby claw things.
Yes.
Let's say it's a dragon head. So he's holding out a dragon head grabby claw. He says, funny thing about this. You said your name is Pam.
Smashing Pam, as my friends know me, and I would love to be your friend. So do please feel free to call me Smashing Pam.
He says, well, Smashing Pam, it seems as if you have another friend who left this for you because there's a letter here saying this is for you.
Oh, that's so sweet of whoever gave me a present.
Well, it happens to be from the most wanted notorious criminal in the world. Oh. And he holds the letter for you to see, reading, for Smashing Pam, the marvelous Professor Frankenfurter. And it says in postscript, you'll need this. Please bring it for me.
And Pam looks at this and she's like, okay, as far as I know, this guy's the bad guy.
Give me a perception roll real quick. Okay. Or an arcana roll. You can take either one.
Oh, do I want to take the -2 chance on my arcana or the 0 chance on my perception? I'll take the 0 chance. 5.
You can actually roll both because there's a reason why you can roll both.
And my arcana is... Shit, that's a 17.
So with a 17, you don't spot it with your eyes, but you feel this thing, this sort of magical flourish on some of the ink coming off that paper. And I would say that you feel the same kind of magical flourish coming from a set of papers in your own belongings. If you go through your belongings, you find the set of papers and you going through your memories that you share with Stephen Hark, your predecessor, you realize that the papers that Father Tully signed and put Stephen Hark's name on now reads your name, the papers for your passage into the city that are approved by Elder Toyota Thon, no longer reads Stephen Hark. It now reads Smash and Pam. So the same enchantment is put on those words that show your name as well. They have changed to say your name, essentially.
Seeing this, Pam's going to kind of whisper, be like, hey, Abby.
Yeah, what's up?
Hey, so is like this paper stuff, it's changing. So is it like you can change the papers because it goes with you?
Yeah, you see, it's kind of like the body is a car and the driver keeps changing. Do they have cars where you're from? I guess carriage. Well, you see, those enchantments for those papers are tied to the blood of the body to reflect the person who that body belongs to. And since this body keeps changing owners, I guess the magic changes the name to reflect that registration.
Huh. So if I put you on Groucho, Groucho's paperwork would all be perfectly fine because it would all be magically in his name.
Not quite. Okay. I'm not the body. I'm just on the body. I'm riding the body and I'm facilitating the body's musical chairs, but I am not myself the thing that is being identified.
Okay. So you're like the tap, not the barrel.
Yeah. And I'm more the frame of the wagon than the wheels and the axles.
Abby, something I love about you is that you always know how to talk to me in a way that we can really relate on a shared level. You're the best.
Golly gee, thanks.
I know we haven't been talking much. I just want you to know that even though we haven't been talking much, I know you're here and I thank you for your contributions. You're such an important part of the party.
I want to point out that while you're having this conversation, Abby is being silent, just communicating with you telepathically, but you have to speak out loud. So everybody is looking at you right now.
And again, I'm going to look at everybody and just be like, what? What? I can't talk to my armor? You don't care about your armor and your gear?
So Columbo hands you the grabby claw.
I think I've got a couple other things I want to look into, gentlemen. If you could entertain the lady for the time being.
And he kind of gives you a wink. And as he passes by, and roll sleight of hand real quick. He whispers, I'll see you in Vanilla, and proceeds out the gate. But he leaves you holding the grabby claw.
I am also going to hand the grabby claw to Groucho and just be like, these things are super fun. I want you to have a chance to play with it, okay?
And so Groucho takes it and he slowly, with a cute smile on his face, and everybody else is watching this, Sir Lionel and the Colonel are both whispering to each other again, but he takes the dragon's head and just kind of like, boop, clips you on the nose very gently and just giggles about it. One other retroactive perception roll that I need, if you could give me one more perception roll. I'm sorry, I know there are a lot of these, but there's a lot going on.
16.
Okay, so with a 16, while you were going through your belongings to find the papers, you noticed that there was a letter in your belongings that you don't recognize from any of your memories.
Ooh. All right, can I pop that open and scan it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's written in very nice script. It says, this letter is confirming the receipt of the city structural plans and warning to clear the city hub before 8 a.m. Lady Blanchett's compliance and contributions have been secured by the means necessary, and it is signed Elder Tully.
Pam's going to look at this. Can she still see Columbo in the distance anywhere? Can she, like, yell for him?
You could try yelling.
All right, I'm going to be like, Columbo, come back! I have just one more thing!
Give me a dex save.
A dex save. Ooh, I have advantage. 17.
The colonel has snuck up behind you again and tries to snatch the letter, but you see his arm coming from over your shoulder and you just manage to swing it away from him. And Sir Lionel, seeing this, says, guards, seize her, and we will talk through this. And so the four guards, each bearing swords, are now advancing upon you. What would you like to do?
And it seems like they mostly want that letter I've got in my hands.
Their orders have been to seize you. Do you want to roll initiative?
Not yet. I want to think about this for just a second, because I want to know if my calling out for Columbo worked.
You don't see any evidence that it has. He's a gnome, so also he's like, you know, you're standing right by these high stone walls, so you really don't have a view of much except for the pit. It's unclear how much perimeter is left outside of these walls, but he proceeded outside of the walls, and then
okay,
you can't see him.
Okay, in the situation that Pam is in right now, she knows how to size up a fight, and it seems like 4-on-1 is not going to go well for her. And she doesn't want to set a bad example for Groucho, and she doesn't want him to get hurt or further traumatized. So I think she's just going to be like, all right, bros, it's cool. Like, I don't know why you're getting so aggro with me. I'm just trying to figure out what you want from me. And if all you want is for me to come inside and have brunch, we can do that. But if you're going to be all weird with me, I don't know if this is going to be a fun brunch for us.
Each of the guards, they're not being rough with you. They are seizing you by each of your arms. So one on either side and then two behind you with their swords out, not necessarily pressed against you or anything like that. But they are.
I'm going to try to shake them off and be like, I'm going peacefully. There's no reason to be grabby. Oh, my God.
OK, and seeing you fighting back.
I don't want it to be as like a fight back thing. I want it to be as like a you're being so rude right now.
Whatever you say, but I'm just saying that I rolled a wisdom save for Groucho and Groucho is attacking. So he is going to attack the first guard with the axe, just going right for the back of their leg. And he nails them with a hit. So he's going to roll damage. He does 8 damage to this guard on one hit. All right, hang on. He also gets a sneak attack bonus. Okay, so he ends up doing a full 11 damage. And that is exactly how much HP one of these guards has. I'm going to picture that as like his first attack is just the attack and he gets like the back of the leg. And as the guard like goes down on one knee, he just whips the second axe for the sneak attack right into the side of his neck and just kills him and says, "Not my Pam!" And he just squares up and looks like a tiny beagle wolverine standing there.
Pam is very conflicted because she could not be more proud in this moment, but she also knows that this is going to kick off some trouble. And she's like, okay, Groucho, this is what we're doing. This is what you want to do. We're going to do it. And I'm going, I guess we're rolling initiative.
Yep. Okay, so one of the guards gets a nat 20 on their initiative. So they are going to get to respond to his companion just getting slaughtered. And I will say that he is going to recognize that Groucho is a wee lad, albeit a terrifying, violent wee lad, but he is going to just do a melee weapon attack, and he's going to use the blunt side of his sword to try to do non-lethal damage to Groucho. He gets a 20 to hit, dirty 20, and so Groucho takes 5 hit points of damage. You see this, his eye is kind of like squinted shut where this, the flat end of this sword just beams him on his head, and he starts to snarl and growl.
Can I enter rage? Because Pam is very mad right now.
It is absolutely your turn after that guard's attack. So yes, you can enter rage. I'll say that it was the other guard that was holding you has kind of like stepped in front of you to attack Groucho over the corpse of his dead compatriot. And there are 2 other guards directly behind you.
Okay, so I've entered rage. I don't think I'm actually going to use any of the rage bonuses, but I am pissed off and she is enraged. So what she is going to do is Pam is going to scoop up Groucho and tell him backpack mode. And I'm going to tell Mr. Beepo, come find us when it's safe. And I'm going to run as fast as I can and dive into the pit.
If you're expecting Groucho to do that movement, you're unfortunately going to have to wait for his turn. To get to the edge of the pit, though, you need to run past the other 2 guards who I said were behind you. So you're going to get 2 opportunity attacks to your face as you run by. So first guard is getting an 18 to hit, and the second guard only gets an 11.
One of those does hit.
Okay, so that's going to be another 1d6 plus 1. Only 3 damage as he just kind of like swings his sword, and it's more that you run into his sword like with your shoulder. Like you get a good gash on your shoulder, but it's nothing perilous.
Is it slashing damage?
Yes, it is.
I have resistance to slashing damage in my rage state.
All right, so that becomes just 1 HP of damage. Like it's not even, it doesn't even affect you.
Like I barely notice, I'm so mad.
And give me an athletics roll as you leap into the abyss.
18!
All right, so with an 18, you just go sailing into the darkness. And after about 5 seconds of falling, you begin to see shapes in the shadows because you do have dark vision. And you begin to make out the shape of the city down below. As it is rushing up towards you, You can see that the city is actually in this enormous cavern. There is water down below, and it seems to be perched on this mesa in the center of this lake. And all around it, you can see in the darkness that there are walkways, there are, you know, arching rock paths that are just weaving around, and you can hear all kinds of noises echoing through the cavern. You can hear wailing from the city below. There's a lot of buildings have collapsed from the impact of falling hundreds of feet down into the caverns below. But you can also hear other noises. You can hear rushing water. And you can hear what sounds like snarling echoing deep just before you're about to make impact. Obviously, with the impact of falling that far, your HP is depleted, but you are a barbarian. You have taken it like a champ. And with groaning, with every bone in your body creaking and every muscle snapping and cracking back into place, you stand up with one HP left.
All right, Pam stands up, shakes it off as best she can. She's stumbling a little bit, but she looks over at her baby, precious Groucho, and she sees, like, are you okay?
Groucho nods and just, like, buries his face in your chest and hugs you tightly.
And I'm going to hug him back as tight as I can. And I'm going to tell him, listen, buddy, I'm not in great shape, but that's okay. I know that you are a strong, smart, capable, perfect, just as you are boy. And I saw what you did to that guy up there. And I know that you can take care of yourself. No matter what happens, I want you to know that I love you and that Mr. Beepo will be there for you and that you should find Ludlow because he will help you. Okay, buddy?
I'm going to need a persuasion roll on that.
Okay, come on, buddy. That is a 4.
He begins to whimper.
All right, I'm going to give him a hug.
Hold on.
I'm just going to hug him for a little bit. And I want to do an animal handling where I scratch his head and try to calm him down at least.
Well, hold off on the animal handling roll because as you pull him towards you, he coughs. It's a very sickly cough. And I'm assuming you pull back and you see his eyes are watering, but not with tears. They're watering in a very sort of sickly way. They're starting to go bloodshot very quickly. As he coughs again, this time some fluid comes out and you see a lot of blood mixed in the spittle. I need you to also make a constitution saving throw.
Oh, Jesus. That's a 6.
You feel as if you have just been dunked into the hottest bath that you've ever been dunked. Your whole body is burning. You are sweating. You are feeling like your head is dizzy and as if you can barely stand on your feet. And you know that this isn't the result of the fall. Groucho shakily begins digging in his pockets as both of you are kind of wavering and swaying to keep upright. He falls to his knees and he's just desperately like, trying to keep his head up and searching his pockets. And he produces a vial. And you recognize it from your memories of Stephen Hark as the vial that the Lady Blanchette produced that had the antidote for the poison that Stephen Hark consumed. And Groucho says,
I realized it would be useful to hold on to this just in case.
My baby boy, you take that right now.
But
no, you do it right now. I will not take it. I don't care how anything goes. I will not drink that. You need to drink that.
But if you die, do you come back? Will you come back someday if the next one that comes after you dies?
I don't know, buddy. I just don't. But I promise you, if I can, I will do everything in my power to find my way back to you. And I promise you that. And I promise you another thing. Abby, who is with me now, she will be with you too. Okay, you'll always have her. And if anybody who comes after me is rude to you, hit them with the axe, just like I taught you, because you're my perfect, special, perfect, precious boy.
Give me a dex save.
16.
As you're giving him this speech, you see a twitch in his eye and a whimper. As he's hearing what you're saying, you can tell he's just having not even a hard time. It's impossible for him to trust and believe these assurances. And he actually tries to dive forward with the vial and put it into your open mouth while you're talking. But with your dex save, you manage to swing his arm back and just sort of like force him to bottle feed himself the antidote. And I need one more con save from you.
A 5.
As you see the sickness and the ailment immediately begin to recede from Groucho's eyes and from his countenance and from the overall temperature of his body. You feel all of your insides convulse as if you were being squeezed from the inside.
And she's going to choke out, "Find Ludlow, tell him I loved him."
And you collapse. And as your eyes close, you don't see just darkness. You see the doorway yet again. And as you are passing through the doorway, this time going in, just as you were previously coming out, you pass someone by and you have an opportunity to tell them something. What do you tell them?
Pam says, "Take care of Groucho or I will haunt your ass." And then I offer them a fist bump.
Thank you very much for that. And thank you very much for playing, Steffa. Okay, welcome to the game, Trevor Hegstrom.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. If you could tell us a little bit about your character that you are playing.
Right. So Silvo is a Aladrin monk. He is a fall Aladrin, I think is what I put him as. So Silvo, so he is a monk, but I have flavored him as a capoeira. So he does kind of
fighting.
Yeah, pretty much. So he actually has, I put an entertainer as his background, since it is kind of a dance.
All right, well, speaking of his background, tell me a little bit about the world he comes from and the adventure that he's been on leading up to this.
Right, so he wasn't much actually an adventurer per se, but he was, I guess we could say he was wandering, and he would teach. He was a capoeira teacher, right? And he would go teaching various people capoeira as kind of a fitness technique. And it became kind of very popular among housewives as a way of keeping fit. And you see, he's not like the kind of like horny bard type, you know, he's focused on the art, but he is kind of a natural flirt and he doesn't realize that he's doing it with women. And so he often had to leave town when husbands got jealous of their wives hanging out with their fitness instructor a bit too much, you know?
Absolutely.
And that was actually how he ended up dying, was got stabbed in the back by a jealous suitor.
Oh, that's fantastic. Make a note for yourself that if you are rolling persuasion or deception with any middle-aged women in this campaign, I will give Silvo advantage because I love that backstory so much. In the meantime, let's dive in. So Silvo, after being brutally murdered by a jealous husband, or jealous ex-husband, let's say, finds himself in darkness. But the darkness has shape, and there is somebody else. He can sense somebody else is in this room, as if he's in a waiting room, and there's somebody else sitting there, but he can't speak. He can't make them out just yet. And all of a sudden, he feels himself compelled to stand up and walk towards a doorway that begins to reveal itself in the darkness, as if his eyes are adjusting. And just as he's going through the threshold, he hears the message that Pam tells him. So does Silvo say anything in response to that?
I will do my best.
Okay, so let's start with a perception roll as Silvo comes to. So let the listeners know, I did prep Trevor for this entry, because Pam died having exhausted all of her abilities, which is not something that Stephen Hark had the opportunity to do, unfortunately. And the way resurrection is going to work is that you can resurrect 1 hour after death and just have all of your HP back, but you will have none of your abilities. If you want to start with a full restore, that's 8 hours after death for resurrection. So Trevor has made the strategic choice as a monk to come back 1 hour later, correct?
Yes, that's correct. Since monks can do most of, they just can't do any kind of key point stuff until I can take a short rest.
Mm-hmm.
So all I have to do is just find a place to take a short rest somewhere and I'll have all that.
All right. So let's start with your perception roll as you open your eyes and come to.
That was a 10.
So with a 10, there's a lot of noise echoing around as you start to realize and feel your body like against cold stone. Dank air moving around you. There's noise coming seemingly in every direction. Where Pam landed was on the edge of the city, where the entire city had collapsed down into the depths of the Underdark on this mesa. You can make out in the darkness the sound of a horn and people calling for
residents of Panda, move to the north end of the city if you can. Residents of Panda, if you are alive, head to the north end.
So you can make that out in the darkness. But then you can also sort of make out another noise coming seemingly from the other direction. So you're on the edge of the city right now. And there is this stone bridge that is connecting to the perimeter of the cavern that you're in. And you can see that this stone bridge connects to a precipice, and that precipice has a dark tunnel in it. And you can almost make out some kind of noise of thrashing or some kind of fighting coming from it. It's tough with a 10, unfortunately, but you can definitely hear some kind of a tumult coming, echoing down that tunnel.
Am I in the tunnel or am I across the bridge from the tunnel?
You're across the bridge from the tunnel.
I have Pam's memories, right?
Yes, you do.
Do I see Groucho anywhere?
No, you do not. But one thing you do see at the mouth of the tunnel, if you remember from Pam's memories, that creature that she chased before the city exploded, she caught it by the cloak and, you know, it snarled at her and it confused her, and then it managed to scamper away over the wall of the city. You see a mandibled humanoid creature lying on the ground. It seems to be dead, or at least prostrate. On its chest is the grabby claw toy that was given to Pam by Columbo the gnome, and that she gave to Groucho before they dove into the pit. The humanoid creature is completely pale. It looks like it's made of alabaster. All the color is drained from it. And maybe about 6 feet away where the grabby claw is, in the dragon's mouth of the grabby claw toy, you see this writhing, what looks like a white flame sort of like wriggling and roiling in the grabby claw. But now I'll turn it over to you. What would you like to do?
Okay, so this is on the other side of the bridge. Do I see anybody else near me besides this thing?
So the thing is maybe about 50 feet away across that bridge, just because it's a straight decline downward from you, slope downward. If you look over your shoulder into the city amongst like some of the crumbled buildings, you can make out figures that are emerging from the rubble that are huddling together, and you can see that there are survivors from the fall of the city that are starting to collect themselves, and they seem to be following the other voice that I told you about before that was calling them to move to the north end of the city.
Can I tell which way is north?
You can make a survival roll.
That is an 18.
Thanks to having Pam's memories of where you were situated beforehand and where you likely landed in relation to the city, Pam and now you were approximately on the eastern side of the city. So you're currently at 3 o'clock and you would then need to find your way to 12 o'clock if you wanted to go to the north end of the city.
My first priority is to find out where Groucho has gone. So I did give him the grabby claw. Silvo is going to try to cross the bridge, but given the nature of things, he wants to check the bridge first, make sure the bridge looks like it can hold his weight, and then make sure there's no like danger around the bridge.
You can give me investigation for the bridge itself, and then you can give me perception for potential danger.
Silvo is not a smart man. Okay, that's an 8 for investigation. Perception is actually pretty good. So that's a 14 for perception.
So with the 8 for investigation, what I will give you is that the bridge is most certainly made of rock. In Silvo's estimation, rock, it tends to be fairly solid. With the perception roll, I would say that your better perception roll, now that you're focused on that tunnel and that general direction a little bit more, you are picking up signs. You are seeing indicators on the ground that there was some kind of a struggle. Like you can make out across the bridge that near that alabaster, pale, drained body, there is some blood on the ground. It does seem like certain number of people went into that tunnel. It's unclear whether Groucho was among them, whether he went willingly or against his will or what have you. You do see signs of people having gone in, but you don't see any signs of anything waiting in ambush or, you know, hiding under the bridge or anything like that.
Okie dokie. Is the living armor...
It's Abby. Hi, how you doing?
Is the armor equipped right now?
Yep.
Because he's a capoeira, you know, monks do not depend upon armor. He says, yes, you are the armor, I remember. Can you be, I don't know, not armor? I cannot move very well while I am wearing you.
Give me an arcana roll.
Oh boy, hope this works. Ooh, that's a 15.
Abby shifts and slides from your torso over your shoulders and then down to your forearms and becomes a pair of bracers of defense for you that you can equip.
Ah, yeah, that's better than nothing. So, how long was I out, Abby?
Oh, you were out for an hour. Felt like it was probably a good idea because Groucho went to find Captain Ludlow. And by the time he came back, there were these creatures that had come out from that tunnel over there and they were trying to get at you. So Captain Ludlow and Groucho were kind of fending you off. And that's why I woke you up as quickly as I did. I'm sorry if you're not feeling totally fresh as a daisy, but they kind of went into that tunnel over there. Groucho got snatched up and Ludlow went after him.
Ah, thank you. It is good to have someone watch my back while I sleep.
Yeah, I did the best I could. Sorry I couldn't do more.
All right. So let's go find Groucho. Silvo is going to make his way across the bridge. And you said there was some kind of flame inside the mouth of the T-Rex toy?
Yes, there is. So the T-Rex toy has clenched in its teeth what seems to be just sort of a ball of self-sustaining white fire. If you would like to make an arcana roll about this fire or a religion roll, you can take your pick.
Let's see here. One's the same as the other. That's a 3. He does not know what this is.
Okay, so with a 3, it just seems to be some kind of magical fire. You know, sometimes wizards can make just balls of fire. So with these grabby claw toys, like they automatically open unless you keep the thing depressed. For the purposes of this magical item, I will say that they remain shut until you release it.
Okay. Silvo wants to kind of hold out the back of his hand to it to see how, if it's actually hot fire, you know, because maybe it's just an illusion of fire or if it's real fire. Is it hot?
It actually feels cold.
Cold fire. That's odd. Okay. What does this thing look, the creature look like? Does it look like...
So it looks humanoid, except for the fact that in your memory, the one that Pam saw had like pale purple, sort of slimy, almost reptilian or amphibian type of skin. This one, on the other hand, its skin has gone completely white, completely drained of all color, but it does have, picture the predator head from like, you know, Predator, mandibles and like everything like that for a head.
Okay. Now that I'm closer, can I see if it's breathing or twitching at all?
You can make a medicine check, but I will say that you can see that it is breathing, yes.
15.
Okay, so with a 15, you can see that it's in some kind of a trance. As you examine it, it's kind of hard to tell with the color drained because the color is drained even from its eyes and pupils, but its eyes are open. It is looking but not seeing. It is breathing, but it is very much in a complete comatose or catatonic state.
Okay, and it's on its back?
Yes, it is on its back, just staring up at the roof of the cavern.
And the grabby arm is on top of it, right?
The grabby arm is a few feet away.
So Silvo is going to try to sneak past this thing without disturbing it and take the grabby arm.
So you have the grabby arm. Are you releasing it or are you keeping the flame restrained?
I'll keep the flame where it is.
All right. So you proceed towards the tunnel then?
Mm-hmm.
The tunnel begins to slope downward very sharply. As an Eladrin, I would assume that you have dark vision, correct?
Dark vision, 60 feet.
So you can see that this tunnel, it's big enough that you don't have to stoop or anything like that. It's about 8 feet high and just completely circular all around. But looking downward in the tunnel, you can see that it drops down sharply from where you currently are at the kind of edge. And before it bottoms out, there's actually a second tunnel that you could kind of jump towards if you wanted to, but you would have to like get a good running start and like make a reasonable athletics roll to be able to get onto that second shelf. So basically there are two tunnels that this kind of like slopes into in an L fashion, if that makes sense.
Hmm. Yeah, Silva will take the one that he can easily do first.
As I mentioned, this is a very steep, so you can climb down, but as you begin to climb down, give me a... Yeah, let's call it dex or strength. So you can make a dex or strength check.
That's a 7.
So with a 7, you're able to make your way down. But just because the walls are a little bit slick, you know, I mentioned before that around the mouth of this tunnel, there was a little bit of blood indicating a sign of a struggle. So it seems like the chase led down this tunnel, in fact. There's also slime as you go further and further down. As you're clambering down somewhat clumsily because of that particular save, like I said, nothing dangerous about that. I do need a dex save, though.
15.
You hear this rushing noise, this sort of like crunching, grumbling, gravelly noise coming from the upper tunnel that I mentioned that you could have jumped to. You see this enormous worm, the size of the tunnel, lunging out of the darkness at you, but you deck save by rolling along the wall and it just crashes just to your left. What do you want to do?
How big is this worm?
So it's large. It would be about 5 feet in diameter. So it's filling up the entire, it would be 8 feet in diameter, give or take. So it's filling up the entirety of this tunnel. You get the sense that this tunnel was made in part by this creature burrowing.
It came out of the tunnel that I didn't go into, right?
Yes, correct. The lower tunnel that you were already clambering down towards, that one's still open. It's unoccupied. There's nothing blocking it.
He's just going to try to run away because that's a big worm and he needs to get to Groucho.
So you slide down the rest of the wall, like the last 10 feet, and you land. You start taking off. You hear this screeching noise as the worm writhes and twists and turns and begins following after you. So the worm is chasing you. It's hot on your tail. It's not able to catch up to you. It's just able to keep the same distance as you're running down the tunnel.
Okay.
You see a fork in this tunnel. You see one path left and one path right. And because you have dark vision, I can tell you that the path on the right veers sharply to the right. You can see just enough of a slope downward that this one starts to drop precipitously. The path on the left, on the other hand, begins to climb upward. Doesn't turn as sharply away. It seems to go more in the same direction that you're already running, but it does climb upward a bit. Which one do you want to take?
You said the one that is a sharp turn goes downward?
Yeah, you can see another sort of like precipice of a drop.
And I can't tell where that fighting sound was coming from.
Okay, give me a perception roll.
Ah, that is a 19.
You can tell that most of the clamor, most of the noise that you're trying to chase is actually coming from the right path that is dropping very sharply.
Question, could I try to take the grabby arm and fling the flame that's in it at the worm?
Oh, yes, you can.
Yeah, that's what Silva would like to try doing.
Okay, make an unarmed strike.
So that's a 15 then.
So with your unarmed strike, you expertly fling the grabby claw at the worm and you release it at just the right moment that this white flame goes arcing right at the face of the creature. It hits the creature right in the face and you expect to see maybe like a fireball or at maybe in your most optimistic hope of hopes that the creature might even be flammable to this particular type of flame. But instead the flame just drops in and just gets absorbed as if it were a ghost. You see the worm just stop completely. And you begin to see it kind of curl in on itself and begin to shake its head. And it just keeps shaking its head. So I'm going to roll right now to see. Okay. What languages does Silvo speak?
Silvo speaks common and elvish.
Okay. So all of a sudden, the worm stills. It calms down. It actually stops shaking its head and it looks around. It kind of like clicks its legs and then it looks at you. And it kind of like clicks its mandibles in a way that doesn't seem very threatening. But then you hear a language in your head that you don't recognize. You can tell that this worm is somehow communicating with you telepathically. But you just hear words in your mind that you don't understand. And it just says something very brief like,
Bullet.
I am sorry, my friend. I do not understand. I hope that I hope that your day goes better from this point.
So kind of like a dog. When it's trying to like, you know, approach, it does take a couple steps forward and kind of like clicks its like, you know, front legs together, like almost obsequiously, like lowers its head to try to make itself as small as this giant worm possibly can. But you hear the words in your head again, it repeats the words and then it adds something else on. And it kind of like gestures its head to the right.
This is going to be a long shot, but the kind of clicking sounds, are they of any kind of rhythm? Because Silvo has training in drum, and so I'm wondering if there's some way he can like interpret something through like the language of music.
Yeah, with a good enough insight roll, I'll say that you absolutely can.
All right. See how that works. That's a 16.
Okay, so with a 16, you begin to realize that, yes, you can see that the way it's clicking every time after it speaks to you telepathically, that it is... It may just be repeating what it's trying to say in a sort of rhythmic fantasy world equivalent of Morse code. So, Silva, you realize that the Morse code, if it is using that, it's saying thank you.
If that has helped, then you're very welcome. And I hope that your day goes better from now.
And it says in Morse code, it taps out, I would like to be back in my own body.
Own body.
And it says, the dog boy took me from my body, and now you put me in this one.
Ah,
So that was a soul. So Silvo is going to approach with the grabby claw, and he's going to try to grab the soul out of this thing.
Give me another unarmed strike with the grabby claw.
That's a 22.
The grabby claw, as you put it towards the creature's chest, it just disappears into the chest the same way the flame did. Mm. And you feel the grabby claw kind of like catch onto something that seems to be about the size of like an apple, and you're able to close onto it. And when you retract it, it is once again holding that ball of white flame. But now the worm is shaking its head again. You see it look around in confusion, and then it notices you. And once again, its mandibles open and it begins to screech furiously at you. I need you to make another dex save.
That's an 8.
This time, the worm actually is able to grab you around your midsection in its mandibles. You are going to take a certain amount of piercing damage. Give me 1 second.
Let's see. I think I had
5 piercing damage.
Let's see. One thing that the monks can do. So I can take a reaction to reduce the tax toll damage by 1d10 plus 6. How much damage did you say I was going to take?
Only 5. You are able to deflect the attack to reduce the damage. While you're not taking any damage, though, you are still grappled as the worm grabs you and takes you up the left tunnel. And in a few seconds, you're going down another slide. Like there's another precipitous drop, and the worm just seems to be riding down these slick tunnels with you at the front of it. And eventually, you tumble out into this cavern that's much smaller than the cavern where the city fell into, but this sort of hive. The dome of this cavern is filled with these holes, and you can see other worms. These are basically picture enormous caterpillars that just look very angry. There's this sort of nest where you can see other worms just like this one sort of tumbling out of the little holes, some high up, some lower down. This cavern is filled with moss and with other kinds of strange phosphorescent berries and fruits. At the center of it, hanging down from a curling vine that is coiled in a tight spiral, you see a shining gemstone in the shape of what you and I would recognize as a telephone receiver. And you feel an enormous magical pull. And across the way, where your worm now gently lets you go, actually, in the hive, and just begins to scuttle about and start feasting on the moss and biting at these berries, on the other side of the cavern from that magical telephone that's hanging, you can see a group of 3 more of those humanoid predator people. And they seem to be paused in sort of consideration of how they're going to enter and infiltrate. Like they're stooped, they're observing, but you can see them observing that phone receiver as well.
I'm picturing a place a bit like the candy room in Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory.
Yes, except with like a slightly Lovecraftian makeover.
Right. Okay. And on the other side are these creatures. So I'm pretty sure that this soul that I have is the soul of that creature out by the front.
Yeah, let's just call them the predators, just for simplicity's sake.
So there's 3 of them, and they look like they're prepping to go after this receiver thing.
Yes.
Do I have any idea what this is? Have I seen anything like this before?
I would say that you can make an arcana roll. I'll give you for free that you can tell that it's extremely magical.
Nope, that's a 6.
All right, so with the 6, you can tell that of all the things in this room, the fruits, the moss, even the caterpillars themselves, you can see chrysalises around the room hanging from the ceiling. But you can tell that the only thing that is at all magical or at all worth a damn in this room is that receiver.
Can you remind me how Pam encountered the predator thing up top?
So I'll have Abby remind you.
Pam kind of saw him being shifty in the garden outside of Nicole Richie's house, chased him, caught him by the cloak and just dragged him to the ground and said, "Hey, you." Then his hood fell off and it turns out it was a predator under there. And yeah, he managed to stun her with magic and then he got away, barely got away.
So the worm thing just kind of dropped me, right? Does it look like any of them are trying to guard me?
You can make a animal handling roll.
That's probably not a good idea. I just want to... Silvo is going to try to walk out of this cavern and try to get back to where he can try to get to where Groucho is. Do any of them stop him?
No. I will say that without making you roll perception, you can actually see that there are other fauna in the room. A nature roll if you were curious about the biome that's in Circle of Life that's happening, but you don't have to.
No, not really. He's got other things on his mind.
So you can see that there are 12 such holes. Like I mentioned, that there are multiple holes that the caterpillars are kind of like crawling in and out of. It seems like they have some kind of a hive network under here. You can make a survival roll if you'd like to try to guess which one might be most effective at getting you back.
Wonderful. That's a 6.
Okay, so the 6, it's anyone's guess. You do know that the one that you came down is going to be pretty difficult to get back up to. And I would say that, you know, some of them are pretty high up on the cavern's like walls and ceiling, but you've got about 6 options that are pretty much at ground level to choose from.
So, Silvo, does it look like these predator guys have found him?
You can make a perception roll if you'd like.
Oh, okay. Nat 1.
Okay, so with the Nat 1, you look back at the precipice and they're not there anymore.
Okay. Does it look like there's anything in this room that might understand common or elvish?
I would say no, just flat out. All you can see right now with your one perception roll are the caterpillars that happen to be just prominently and just very casually munching around you.
So the caterpillars, those are the same as the worms that brought me in here, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I refer to it as a worm, but for the purpose of theater of the mind, I would more closely picture like large caterpillars.
Okay. So he's going to throw the soul back into one of these caterpillars in hopes that he can try to communicate with it again.
So the caterpillar once again clicks and says, I would like to go back to my body if you can help me with that.
Yes, I am very willing to help you get back to your body. Two things. I have been dragged down here. I don't know where here is. And also, I think there's a couple of other, you know, the people that look like you. Not like you are now, you know, not in this big bug form, but in your normal handsome self. I think there are some of them around here. I'm not sure where they went, though.
And he just says, they will want you to try to speak with Elder Sister. And as I said, I'm going to need you to make an intelligence saving throw.
Intelligence saving throw. Oh, that's not good. That's not good. That's a 7.
He clicks and says, your assistance with our contacting Elder Sister will be appreciated, just as I will appreciate you helping me get back to my body when we are done with you and the dog boy. And as you hear that click, that message tapped out, you see that one of the predators has their hand out to you and is casting a spell that is making your mind feel like it's in a vice grip. You're being completely controlled. And you are marching at their will towards a tunnel that two of them are now following you down. And just out of the corner of your eye, you see the third has approached that hanging telephone receiver and has cut it down and is taking it. While the worm follows you, clicking to its brethren, you hear the worm clicking out, we will speak to Elder Sister.
Thank you for listening to D&D Versus. This episode features Stefan Nunes as Smashin' Pam, Trevor Hegstrom as Silvo, and yours truly, Yanato Blue, as your Dungeon Master. D&D Versus is not affiliated with Wizards of the Coast. Support our podcast and get access to additional content at patreon.com/dndverses. Our next episode comes out May 29th.